who are here. So let's see how we go. But please do this at home. I'm going to give you some famous last words. I want you to guess who said them. Okay. Have we got the first one there, Tim? Okay, here's your first one. All my possessions for a moment of time. Whose last words are these? Alan. Oh, you mean Alan or you mean Alan? Okay, Whitney Houston, Jason's mother. All right, let's see who it is, Tim. Queen Elizabeth I. There you go. All right, next one. I'm so bored by it all. Emily's heard that, but she's not accessing at the moment. Any wild guesses? Marilyn Monroe? No. Any random teenager? It is this guy. Emily's right. It's Sir Winston Churchill. Yeah, yeah. You would have thought he had a fairly interesting life, but there you go. Okay, next one. Go away, I'm all right. Again, probably any random teenager, yeah? A king? This was H.G. Wells. There you go. Okay. All right, next last words. I have offended God and mankind because my work didn't reach the quality it should have. Yeah. Oh, close. I mean, kind of close. Oh, sorry, yes. Jason said Michelangelo. Nope. Yes. Thank you, Alan. It's the first right answer we've had. Leonardo da Vinci. Yeah. Quite a harsh self-critic. All right, last one. I love this one. Do not cry for me, for I go where music is born. I might say that's my last words, I reckon. John Lennon? No. Think older. As in historical. Close. Older. Shorter. Yes, J.S. Bach said this. Now, he was a church worship director, so there you go. All right, I don't know how well you did. Maybe put some comments in and see what you think. Yes, you're right, Bron. People with one person in the room, well, you can still guess. But there you go. Okay, we're starting a new series as we lead up to Easter. And we've called this new series Final Conversations, which is why we've been looking at some famous last words here. What we want to do is look at some of the last conversations that Jesus had with people in the week or so, and in some cases in the hours before his death. We kind of instinctively feel that what we say at the end of our life is significant, is important. And whether that's actually true or not, and when you go through a lot of these last quotes, it's you really wonder that. What we can say is the gospel writers believe it's true for Jesus, because as we look at each of the gospels, it's actually time slows down in that last week, and we hear more and more of what Jesus is actually saying, and maybe a little bit less of what he's doing. If you had one of those, we don't see them as much anymore, but if you had one of those red letter Bibles, you notice that it gets more red the further you go through the gospel. So what we want to do is we want to look at people that Jesus talked to. We want to put ourselves in their shoes, and we want to say, what is Jesus saying to us in that conversation? Jesus is saying important things right at the end. The gospel writers think they're important and have recorded them. They have something to say to us too. And as you will have guessed from Sally's reading, we're beginning with the event that began Jesus' last week, that actually triggered off everything that happened after that, in human terms anyway. And the conversation is this conversation between Jesus and Martha outside the town of Bethany before Lazarus is raised from the dead. Let's have another little look just at that first part of the conversation. It goes like this, and it's a little unclear, but I'll have a go. When Martha got word, When Martha got word that Jesus was coming, she went to meet him, but Mary stayed in the house. Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if only you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now I know that God will give you whatever you ask." Martha's first words here, "If only you had been here, my brother would not have died." I think possibly we are all familiar with that kind of agonizing, gut-wrenching feeling of "if only." If only something had not happened, or it had. If only I had not, or had. If only someone else had not, or had. Everything would be different. I would be where I want to be. This would not be happening. We all have that longing to jump into a time machine and go back and change whatever it was that blew everything off course, if only. And we see in our movies and books and TV that the idea that we might be able to do that is really attractive. We like to imagine that we could just, you know, do a few circuits of the earth, Superman, and turn everything back to where it was. But we can't. The reality is that we can't do that. And for Martha here, it's a particularly painful if-only moment. Her brother has died. One of her best friends, she believes, could have prevented that. But he wasn't there when he was meant to be. If only Jesus was there, her brother would be alive and well. Does she know why Jesus didn't come earlier? We don't really know. Is she accusing him with this question? I'm not sure, because we can't actually hear Martha's tone, can we? But she's certainly telling him straight up. She's being honest with Jesus. She's telling him her grief and her frustration and her regret. She's not going to pretend to her beloved Lord that everything is okay and she's glad to see him, that she's doing all right and she doesn't have all sorts of mixed feelings going on. So this is actually a good start to the conversation. It's a healthy start. And then she adds these words, "But even now, I know that God will give you whatever you ask." What is Martha saying here? I don't think she's saying, "But I know that you're very soon going to raise him from the dead right now." Because her conversation and her behaviour shows us that she hasn't actually got that in view. A few minutes later when Jesus says, "Your brother will rise again," she doesn't say, "Yep, good, that's just what I had in mind." She's actually caught by that. So, and later on when Jesus directs that the stone be rolled away, what does Martha say? She's, "Oh, that's really a bad idea." So she's not envisaging what Jesus will do. So what is she saying? We can't be sure exactly. I'm not even sure that she was sure. But this statement here is an act of faith. It's Martha reaching a hand out into the darkness. She doesn't know what is there, but she's willing to do it. At the very least, she's saying, "I still have faith and hope in you, Jesus, even if I don't know what the result of that will be, and I don't know what that will look like." So we have two brave steps by Martha. First, she's honest with Jesus. She expresses how she feels to him. And secondly, she expresses her faith and her hope in him despite where everything is. But Jesus wants to take her further than that. You see, Jesus has a much bigger picture of what's going on here. We've shown from the beginning of the story, and that's why I got poor Sally to read the whole lot and do a whole marathon, because at the beginning we can get a glimpse of how significant this event is, even though it's actually easy for us these days to miss it. Why does Jesus delay? I've heard numbers of explanations and justifications and excuses made by various scholars. Why does he delay? And to an extent, we have an answer in the passage where Jesus says, Lazarus is dead, and for your sake, I'm glad I was not there so you may believe. So we know it's for God's glory, but can I be honest and say it still makes me feel a little uncomfortable that Jesus would be letting his friend die so that he can do a more dramatic miracle afterwards? It still feels uncomfortable. So what's actually going on? Well, I thought this might help. I want you to picture a really close friend, someone that you love dearly. And imagine that tomorrow morning you get an email from that friend's mother or husband or wife or child saying this: the one you love is sick. We're stuck in Italy due to the coronavirus lockdown. Can you come? Just let the thoughts run through your mind. How would you react to that? If you took maybe a day or two to pray about that and to consider whether going to Italy right now was a good idea, would that be unreasonable? In fact, if you were to decide that perhaps you shouldn't go at all, would that in fact be fairly entirely reasonable right now? See, the thing is, that's where Jesus pretty much finds himself. Going to Bethany right now, in the situation that he's in, is pretty much like jumping on a plane and going into the middle of Italy here and today. It's going to bring everything to a head. It's really risking his life. There's an opportunity to glorify the Father and to bring more people to believe. And on top of all that, he loves Lazarus. He loves Martha and Mary, and he can't bear to think of their sorrow. But this is going to likely bring on his death and bring everything that he's come to earth for into happening. Wouldn't this require a little wrestling with the Father in prayer? Wouldn't Jesus be praying earnestly for the Father to raise Lazarus? Wouldn't he wait on the Father's answer before acting in such an explosive situation? And notice this, when he announces to the disciples, we're actually going to Judea, they don't say, oh, what have we been waiting for these last couple of days? They react pretty much as our friends and family would in our own imaginary scenario here. You can't go there, that's insane. You'll die if you do that. It's like Thomas, who is brave if somewhat melancholic, saying, let's go too and die with Jesus. So when Jesus arrives at Bethany, he knows Martha's grief, but he also knows the bigger picture. He knows what is about to descend on him. And he not only intends to raise Lazarus, he knows he's setting off a train of events that's willed by the Father, where he will die, he will be raised, the whole world will be freed from death. Must have been a pretty strange and unique position to be in. And in the next part of the conversation, he actually has a go at sharing this with his friend Martha. Let's have a look at the next part of the conversation. Jesus told her, your brother will rise again. Yes, said Martha, he will rise when everyone rises, at the last day. And Jesus told her, I am the resurrection and the life. Anyone who believes in me will live even after dying. Everyone who lives in me and believes in me will never, ever die. Do you believe this, Martha? With these words, Jesus brings the future hope that Martha already has and brings it into the present for her. She has a hope of resurrection that's a hope pretty much the same as all Jewish people at that time, with the exception of the Sadducees, that there will be a resurrection at the last day and that all God's people will rise. But this is very much a future hope. We don't know Martha's tone here, but I expect it's probably a hope that's so far in the future that it's not really that comforting right now. In fact, She's probably been told this over and over again in the last 4 days by all sorts of people trying to be helpful. But what Jesus says next is totally unexpected and would have thrown her considerably. It takes that distant hope of resurrection and swings it right into the now for Martha. Jesus says, "It's me, here, now. I am the resurrection and the life." And it's one of those parts of the Bible, I think, where we're so familiar with it that we just don't get how shocking that is. It's, what can he mean? How can this future hope suddenly be here in front of me? And Jesus is saying, "I am that hope." But you know, it's still true today that so many of God's promises are future hopes, and yet they're here for us to taste now. Eternal life, we are promised that we will live forever in God's presence, and yet we can live eternal life right now. We can be in God's presence now. God's judgment, we're told, is in the future, but we're also told now that we will be set free from any condemnation through Jesus Christ. We look forward to new creation. We look forward to God remaking the world. And yet, we see so many glimpses of that beauty around us even now. And all that starts with Jesus is the resurrection. The one who through whom these other statements are possible. Let's look at these. "Anyone who believes in me will live even after dying. Everyone who lives in me and believes in me will never ever die." So, actually sounds a little confusing at first, and I can imagine to Martha, very hard, first time ever to hear something like that, to get her head around it. But I found it helpful to actually line it up with Jesus' "I am" statement. So Jesus says, "I am the resurrection and I am the life." And each of these statements seems to line up with one of those. "Anyone who believes in me will live even after dying." So this is the promise that we will all be resurrected through Jesus the resurrection. We will live even after we die. Then this other statement, "Everyone who lives in me and believes in me and will never ever die," that's the life we have in Jesus, the life. And we have that now and we have that forever. It doesn't mean we're never going to physically die, and it's not meant to mean that, and we can see that just by the statement before that says "even while dying." But together, these two statements promise life now and life forever through Jesus, the resurrection and the life. But then Jesus says something more personal. He says, "Martha, do you believe this?" Jesus is asking Martha to actively put her faith and trust in him. He offers her life, but he's asking for her response as well. And Martha's answer is really significant. She doesn't just nod. She doesn't just say yes. She makes a clear and confident statement of faith in Jesus. "I have always believed that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one who has come into the world from God." Now, some translations just have "I believe," which sounds to us like a creed kind of statement. But the wording in this version actually gives us a look into what the meaning in the Greek says. It's not a spur of the moment thing. It's actually something that has developed over time. Another translation says, "I have come to believe." So Martha's not just kind of saying what she thinks Jesus wants to hear or just saying what she thinks the moment requires. She's actually bringing together her experience over the last years. She has known Jesus and she has loved him. She has listened to him. She's heard so many things that he's said. She's seen him do miracles. It's all come together in her mind. And even given what's happened in these last few days, her hope doesn't waver. Martha chooses to believe in Jesus. Now, I don't know if you noticed, but Martha's confession is actually quite similar to Peter's more famous confession. I won't go into why I think that is. But here's his confession. "You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God." And Jesus says to that, You are blessed, Simon, son of John, because my Father in heaven has revealed this to you. You did not learn this from any human being. And I think we have no reason to doubt that Martha's confession too is revealed to her by God, and that she too is blessed. And that's the conversation. It's pretty short. Now, it's obvious, but I just want to point out the obvious here. Martha's statement comes before Lazarus is raised from the dead. We know the ending really well, and so sometimes we even judge what she says by looking over to the ending, but Martha has no idea. For all she knows, Jesus has just come here to comfort her and Mary. And in the face of the disappointment and the grief and the being completely in the dark, she declares her faith in Jesus as the Messiah. So, this is all very interesting, but what does it have to do with us? Well, plenty, if we're willing for Jesus to have this conversation with us. You see, it is a significant conversation. It's not just a roadside chat. Everything in this conversation is relevant and true for us today. Jesus invites us all to exchange our if only for if Jesus. If Jesus really is the resurrection and the life. If he really is the Lord. If he really has the power to change things. If he really gives the strength for everything. So what if you were to confront Jesus with your if only? Perhaps it's an if only which comes out of now, the things that we're going through currently. Perhaps it's an if only that you've actually borne for years and you don't actually, still don't know why. You still don't see God's hand. You still don't understand. You still have a hanging if only. Do you have one? I do. Then what if you were also able to speak your faith, your hope in him, despite this if only, without actually knowing what he might do about it, just like Martha did? What would he say back to you? Would he remind you of who he is? Would he have some further answer or act for you like he did for Martha? And are you willing to confess your faith and hope in Jesus as your Saviour, the Son of God, the one sent into the world, before you can see his answer? Thank you, family.